What happens when you achieve everything you thought you wanted and still feel empty? Standing at ground zero after 9/11, wealthy and accomplished, a successful venture capitalist contemplated ending his life. This wasn't supposed to be how the story went. Years of climbing, striving, and accumulating had led to this moment of profound hollowness, seen but not truly seen, in life but not really living. This paradox sits at the heart of a transformative approach to leadership that has reshaped how thousands of executives understand their work. The insight is deceptively simple, yet revolutionary. Becoming a better leader isn't about acquiring more skills or strategies. It's about becoming a more whole human being. When we lead from a divided self, outer success masking inner turmoil, we create organizations that reflect our fragmentation. But when we dare to examine the patterns and beliefs driving us, when we face the ghosts that haunt our decisions, we discover something unexpected. Leadership becomes less about proving our worth and more about expressing our wholeness. Picture a simple equation: practical skills plus radical self-inquiry plus sharing with peers equals enhanced leadership plus greater resiliency. Most leadership development stops at practical skills, the techniques and frameworks. But this formula reveals what's missing: understanding why we lead the way we do. Radical self-inquiry compassionately exposes self-deception, like removing protective armor we didn't know we were wearing. The CEO who micromanages might be replaying a childhood where nothing felt safe unless controlled. The founder who can't delegate might be unconsciously proving she's worthy through exhaustion. These aren't random patterns. They're survival strategies that once kept us safe, but now keep us stuck. Sharing transforms personal work into collective wisdom. When one person bravely admits their struggles, others realize they're not alone. This creates resilience and ultimately equanimity, mental calmness regardless of circumstances, the capacity to say, everything's great and I'm okay, everything sucks and I'm okay. What we don't examine in our lives impedes our happiness, often tricking us into using our careers to heal unacknowledged childhood wounds. As a boy, hours were spent playing Monopoly with money hidden under the board, mentally tracked but never revealed. This early relationship with money became intertwined with safety itself. Grandparents' house meant sanctuary. Lemon drops, coffee, roses, figs from a tree brought from Italy. Money became the adult version of those lemon drops, a way to finally feel secure. Years later, on a psychoanalyst's couch, the confession emerged, wanting Bill Gates-level wealth, enough lemon drops forever to never feel unsafe again. Yet the paradox: becoming rich led to standing at ground zero contemplating suicide. Software developers call outmoded code buried within programs ghosts in the machine, once useful routines that now hinder operations. We all carry psychological code, operating instructions for navigating relationships formed when we were too young to question them. A 64-year-old client remained haunted by his father's disapproval decades after that father's death. Another carried the warning: the higher up the pole the monkey climbs, the more his ass shows. A message to stay low, stay hidden. Money, safety, shame, belonging, fear. These paradoxes shape us until we choose to examine them. On a Brooklyn rooftop the night before announcing his CEO departure, a powerful realization emerged. Learning to lead yourself is the hardest part of leadership. We're wired to look outward, to feel pain and blame others. Self-leadership requires facing who we truly are. Stand with feet shoulder-width apart, back firm, arms at sides with palms open. Strong back, open heart, the warrior stance. The strong back represents fiscal discipline, clarity, vision, and accountability. The open heart embodies caring for people, purpose, and meaning beyond ego. A Hasidic tale explains why Torah says to place holy words upon rather than in our hearts. Our hearts are closed, so we place words on top until one day the heart breaks and the words fall in. Consider the Buddhist saint Milarepa, who found his cave filled with demons. Chasing them made them multiply. teaching them Dharma quieted but didn't remove them. Only when he placed his head into the final demon's mouth, saying, "Eat me if you wish," did it vanish. Surrendering to fear dissolved it. The greatest crucible is bringing forth your whole self, glory and mess alike. Teen years ended in a psych ward after an X-Acto knife attempt. The coping strategy became constant doing, academics, plays, student government, politics. Racing heart and temple sweat became familiar companions. This was chasing metaphorical lemon drops, believing exhaustion meant not doing enough. The world rewarded this pace with promotions, while something inside was dying. Years later, blinding beach headaches brought realization. A therapist connected them to suppressed feelings, teaching, "What am I not saying that needs to be said?" The pain was the soul saying, "Wake up," stuck in an unbearable job with untrustworthy people, living a divided life where inner self disconnected from outer presentation. A 25-year-old founder questioned whether coaching was justifiable. When asked what felt justified, he stammered, "75?" and cried when it was accepted, confessing, "I don't feel worthy." He feared slowing down. "If I'm not panting, I feel like I'm not working." He was running from childhood trauma of war and cancer. This strategy, running faster to outrun demons, feeds never enough anxiety, clouds thinking, and mistakes motion for meaning. When we unconsciously bend others to serve our hunger for belonging, we're not leading, we're outrunning demons. Standing still and asking hard questions becomes the path forward. Our harshest inner critics exist to protect us from humiliation and shame. We hate our creations partly because reality never matches our vision, but mostly because a critical voice questions our right to create at all, whispering that we're frauds, unworthy of love, unsafe in the world. Jung noted that until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. The Loyal Soldier captures this. Imagine a soldier on an isolated island, defending territory with an old rifle. These survival strategies, stay small, don't stand out, be careful, were brilliant for childhood, but limiting for adults. The Crow pesters us because he loves us and wants safety. From "Am I worthy enough?" flow protective strategies, codependent caretaking, people-pleasing, hypervigilance. Yet these mechanisms carry gifts. Vigilance becomes reading rooms. Pleasing becomes genuine service. Appearing calm becomes actual competence during storms. For leaders, unsorted baggage affects everyone. The highest calling? Take our seats as humans and build humane companies where it's gloriously safe for others to be human. Taking your seat means no longer defining yourself by what you're doing, allowing heartbreak to wash through you while the open-hearted warrior emerges. A friend in his 50s spoke of no longer striving. With his seat taken, he defines himself by who he is, not what he does, leading to equanimity and acknowledging regrets while seeing possibilities. What complicates life is our unwillingness to do the inner work. When leaders fail to look inward, they turn turmoil outward, masking anxiety with aggression. As one teacher notes, violence is what we do when we don't know what to do with our suffering. To reboot leadership, ask, how would I act if I remembered who I am? What choices would I make if I said what needed saying? A life well written is a life well led. Your wholeness is your greatest leadership asset. You don't need to fix yourself. You need to know yourself. Take your seat. The world needs your whole self.